Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke.
I feel the spirit, independent spirit, coursing all through me. Oh, I feel it. I feel the spirit, independent spirit. I'm gonna let it guide me on. I feel the spirit, independent spirit, like a voice calling. Better listen to it. I feel the spirit.
Merton McClure was the first woman and the first American to successfully row across the Atlantic Ocean. She succeeded in 1999 after an attempt in 1998 was foiled by a hurricane. Her vessel? A 23-foot rowboat she had built and named the American Pearl. The story of her accomplishment has inspired the new musical Row, with a book by Daniel Goldstein and music and lyrics by singer-songwriter Dawn Landis.
History's daughter.
Row was scheduled to have its world premiere production at the Williamstown Theater Festival this past summer. WTF and artistic director Mandy Greenfield have partnered with Audible to release audio versions of the shows intended to play on their stages last season. A release date for Row hasn't been finalized. They're hoping for early 2021. But Dawn Landis' album of songs from the show, recorded with musician friends, is available now. It was a delight to welcome Dawn back to the Roundtable to talk about Row, and I began by asking her where she'd gotten the idea to write the musical.
Well, I have to credit my collaborator, Danny Goldstein, who wrote the book for the musical, for this even being a thing, because I would have never thought to have written a musical if he hadn't asked me over breakfast, hey, you want to write a musical? So he was steeped in the musical theater tradition. He had just written his first musical that premiered at Williamstown called Unknown Soldier.
That's right.
And he kind of comes from the Broadway world. He was a director mainly, but wanted to get more into writing. And basically, he liked my music and asked me, you know, what would I want to work with him on something, and what should we write, you know? And I had just finished Tori's memoir called A Pearl in the Storm, and she's from Louisville originally. I'm from Louisville originally. I wrote on the crew team in college. Her story was sort of I was aware of it because she was sort of a local celebrity when I was growing up in high school. And I remember in 1998, I was in high school, and that was her first attempt to row across the ocean solo in a rowboat that she built by herself. No small feat.
Right.
And unfortunately, she hit a hurricane, or rather a hurricane hit her twice, and she had to be rescued at sea. And so I remember that in the newspaper. But by the time she got around to her second attempt in 1999, I was actually in New York City rowing on the NYU crew team in December of 1999 when she became the first woman and the first American to row across the Atlantic. And then it took her 10 years to write the memoir. And then it took us 10 years to make it into a musical.
Musicals take a long time. Musicals
take a long time. They do. And I had no idea because, you know, I'm a singer-songwriter. I'm used to the album cycle, which is like, you know, write a record in a year or two, put it out, tour it for a year or two, and then write another one. But this has been a over 7 year venture for Danny and I, and we're really fortunate to have Mandy Greenfield and Williamstown involved, and Tyne Raffaele is going to be the director. And you know, of course, it didn't happen this summer like we wanted it to, but I feel really fortunate that my plan was to put the album out when we had the premiere at Williamstown. So I had already recorded it all with a bunch of musicians from Louisville, featuring, you know, singers that I love, like Will Oldham and Ben Solee and this guy Tyrone Cotton. There's a bunch of them. So I had the album ready to go when, you know, this whole thing happened, then the COVID disaster, you know.
Yeah, of course.
Our own personal hurricane for the show, and I mean the world, I guess. But yeah, so that's sort of a little bit of a little tiny bit of the story, I guess. Yeah,
no, of course. I mean, after a decade of nearly of working on it, how could you possibly distill it much more than that? So you had to write, well, you chose to, in working with Danny and working on this, to write songs for a specific story, a story that wasn't your own. How did you approach the songwriting for this?
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely new for me. I mean, I had written songs from characters in my mind in the past. You know, I remember I wrote a song from Jodie Foster's perspective once, like a young Jodie Foster out of Taxi Driver. That was on one of my albums. And so I've done that a little bit here and there, but never to this extent. So, but it was pretty easy actually, because the language in her memoir is very poetic and lyrical. So it was easy to take moments of her story and make them into songs.
It really is an unbelievable story. Tori's story is that I've learned from you already, even without having seen the show, because I watched your TED talk about it and hadn't heard of it before. She took videos of herself while she was on the voyage that along with the memoir must have been immeasurably valuable for you to imagine the actual circumstances to get inside of her head to write the songs for the show.
Yes. And she's been an incredible resource to us. I mean, the first thing that Danny suggested we do after we decided this was going to be our story that we focused on was to go to Louisville and get her permission. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I wrote two songs and he wrote up an outline of what the story, the show would be. And we got a meeting with her. And, but yeah, she basically said, you have my permission, go for it. You know, I've got a day job. So, she's the president of Spalding University, by the way, which is incredible because she went there to learn how to write her memoir.
Oh, wow.
She went to there, got her MFA in their writing program. And then why not? Let's just be the president. Why not?
What?
Let's just, you know.
She has no usual boundaries in life. She just exactly. goes for everything. Yes. That's so incredible.
Yep. Mm-hmm. It's funny. She told me recently, we were being interviewed for something and she's together and she said, I have this, I'm more comfortable with the unknown than most people. You know, how else could I get in a boat and just do that?
Yeah.
You know? So she's aware of this.
Of course. So one of my questions here was to ask you your familiarity with rowing or navigation in the ocean before working on the show. But you mentioned that you were on the row team in high school and in college. Do you think that fact made it latch onto your heart and brain, made her story latch onto your heart and brain more than it might have otherwise?
Well, it's funny. I didn't row in high school.
Oh, okay.
But I heard about her story in high school. And I think somewhere subconsciously that seed was planted. And when I went to NYU, I said, why not sign up for the crew team? It had never crossed my mind. It was at, you know, like a freshman fair or something, you know. It was an intense experience. I mean, we got up at 4 a.m. every day and got in a car and rode on the Long Island Sound. I mean, it was definitely, I had no social life as a freshman. you know, that was pretty much my social life was being on the crew team. And it was a great experience and really beautiful way to watch the sunrise every day.
Sure.
And yeah, I really connected with the sport. I haven't done it much since, although when I was working on this show, I spent a summer in Louisville writing for it, and I did get to go rowing with her, which was terrifying because I hadn't been in a boat for like 15 years. And she sat behind me and just laughed and laughed as I crabbed. For any rowers out there, when you crab, it's the worst. It's when your oar gets stuck in the water. Mm. And anyway.
But she laughed at you. So that's
fun. She laughed at me, yeah.
Our guest is musician Dawn Landis. She's written the music and lyrics for the new musical Row with a book by Daniel Goldstein. The Williamstown Theater Festival will release a recording of the show on Audible, hopefully early next year.
Would you say that you are friends now, or is the relationship of biographic musical writer to subject not exactly friendship? How does it work when she knows that you're, you know, mining her life for your next artistic output?
I don't know. I think about this quite often because, I mean, my relationship to people that come see me perform to hear my songs is very one-sided. You know, they know about me. They've heard my music. I don't know about them. And now that's the roles are reversed, mm-hmm. you know. And I mean, I have shared some things about myself with Tori. When I was on the Sufjan tour, she came and met me for soundcheck, and I showed her the bus, you know, and I said, this is where I sleep. It's kind of like the coffin cabin of the American Pearl, your boat. And so, you know, she knows about me a bit, but yeah, it is, the roles are definitely reversed there, where I just have just mined and dug through her story so intimately and looked at hours and hours and hours of video footage from her rows. And yeah, it's interesting. It's an interesting relationship.
I bet.
Never had one like it before. No.
Would you call her a personal hero?
You know, it's very interesting because when I gave the TED Talk on Tori in 2015, I did not title the talk Songs About a Hero or mm-hmm. Songs for My Hero or whatever TED ended up titling it. And I was actually a little embarrassed when it came out, you know, because I worked so hard on the presentation and la la. And I was like, I would have never said that. You know, right. I would have never blatantly said, like, this person is my hero. It's just a little bit, there's something embarrassing about that, mm-hmm. Which is silly because adults should be allowed to have heroes, you know?
Yes. We should always be aspiring to more.
We should. Exactly. Yeah, I think definitely she's a heroic personality, and I look up to her, and her story inspires me to want to be a better person and do more with my life. So, yeah. Sure. Hero. I'll take it.
How did you and Daniel Goldstein work on putting the show together? What kind of outline of the book did he give you for you to know where to put in songs, or how does that work? And I know, of course, it involves from whenever you first put it up in a workshop to where it is now, it's probably changed a lot. It will probably still change before the Williamstown exactly. recording comes out on Audible. Mm-hmm. But how did you two work together to put the show together?
Well, it began, we got a commission from the Public Theater mm-hmm. That through Joe's Pub. And so we worked on it for about a year. And
you
then
both have a relationship with the Public?
Well, I knew about this commission because I had played at Joe's Pub a zillion times. And but they commissioned, usually what they were doing was hiring or putting together a cabaret artist, typically with a director. But I came to Shanta Thake from the Public. I came to her with this idea with Danny in mind already. Mm-hmm. And so we hadn't begun. We had just had that, you know, those two songs and the permission and the his outline. But we were able to flesh it out thanks to them. And we did two workshops, and then I did a concert version of the show where I sang the parts of Tori, and then there were actors on the stage who read the dialogue. And we did like three or four performances on the Joe's Pub stage, which was great. And I think that was in 2015. So, but it took us a year to write it mm-hmm. to get to that point. You know, it's been it definitely has changed a lot. And that's the thing about musical theater that I didn't know, you know. I have an agent and she's wonderful, and she just kind of laughs at me a lot because I have such different expectations from the singer-songwriter world, you know.
Yeah.
I said, okay, here we go. It's done, you know. All done. She's like, ah, no. That's not how it works. But I had an inkling because Danny had told me on our first meeting, like, this could take 10 years. And I just couldn't believe it, you know, because we wrote it in a year.
Right.
We wrote the first draft in a year, and it has changed a lot since then.
Could you tell from working with him that you responded to similar parts of Tori's memoir, that there were certain tales, certain passages you wanted to definitely include in your show? Or did you have to go back and forth and figure out what those moments were?
I think it was pretty clear. We really were on the same page on so much of this. And I kind of followed his lead about where the songs should be. You know, he had experience doing this before and he's worked in theater more. And, you know, a lot of moments, you know, I've probably written like 40 songs for this show. You know, now there's about what, 17, 18. So you know, a lot
like
of them
18
were
on the album. Yeah, at least. Yeah.
They're thrown away, you know, by the wayside, you know, cutting floor kind of thing. But yeah, I mean, it's been tricky just to figure out how to tell the story and what works best theatrically. But song-wise, for me, I love every single song I've written for this show. They're all very different and they're all in different voices, which is fun for me because I never get to write in men's voices, mm-hmm. for example.
Right.
I got to write a song for Muhammad Ali to sing. I got to write a song. This was cut, but I got to write a song for, you know, a noble Louisvillian with like a handlebar mustache to sing. You know, that doesn't happen in my life usually.
Explain the Muhammad Ali connection. I know it, but let's tell the people.
Oh, yes. So yes, people, everyone, this is incredible. And this is all true. That's the crazy thing about this story. We've been able to check this with Tori. All of these things are in fact true. She's just a magnificent person. And as it happened, when she had her first attempt in 1998, you know, it was very public, all of it, you know, she had sponsors and everyone was thinking she would become the first woman to row across the ocean, and that didn't happen. She came back to Louisville and she was broke and feeling disheartened, and she had quit her job working for the mayor to do her row. Mm-hmm. And so she didn't have a job. And then lo and behold, Muhammad Ali taps her to help him build his Muhammad Ali Center in Louisville. And they worked together and he hired her to be his right-hand woman. Which is pretty remarkable.
Yeah, absolutely. And then he knew about the row, of course, and encouraged her to try again.
He did. Yeah, he said, you don't want to go through life as the woman who almost rode across the Atlantic Ocean.
It's really just a bananas true story. I can't believe it.
Part
of it is enough.
I know. Yeah, and along the way, she gets her master's in divinity at Harvard and becomes a lawyer at U of L and goes to Smith. You know, she's just a very educated woman, constantly learning and evolving. And it makes you want to, as I said, like every reading we've ever done of this show, every time I even sing a song from the show in one of my concerts, people want to know more about her. And mm-hmm. It's just inspiring.
Absolutely
to know is. That it's possible to, you know, I don't know if about you, but I ran a marathon a few years ago and I didn't think that that was possible for my body. You know, I didn't think yeah. how could I actually do that?
Right. Like I've run a 5K, Dawn, and I still think that the marathon might not be possible.
But it is.
No, of course.
That's the
of course.
But when you push yourself, the idea is to push yourself to any limit that you don't, that you push yourself past your limitations. And that's what this show and this story inspires people to do, which I think is really important.
Absolutely. Before I let you go, I know that the timing exactly of when the show with a cast will be released by Williamstown Theater Festival through their partnership with Audible, but what do you know about the process that's the recording will happen? Like how are the actors going to, or is anybody going to gather? Is the question, I guess.
That is the question. We are struggling to figure that out.
Okay.
I know that I can tell you that we've done readings over Zoom, mm-hmm. which has been tricky.
Yeah.
You know, with music, anyone who's ever tried to sing Happy Birthday over Zoom knows that it's really difficult.
Yeah, it's riddled with latency. Yeah.
You can't sing together, which is hard for a musical to not be able to sing together. So, but we have been able to work on the story a lot. Just through Zoom with the actors, and it's all coming together. I don't know exactly when, but I know that it is happening. So, and I'm very excited by it. I can't wait for the world to know about it. I mean, God bless Mandy Greenfield for making this happen. I think it's incredible.
The album is gorgeous with you singing the songs. I am also very excited to hear, you know, a full-bodied cast perform the numbers too, because that is what you've been working toward. That's what we want.
Yeah.
Congratulations on Ro, Dawn, and thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks, Sarah.
To learn more about Ro and the Williamstown Theater Festival's Audible season, visit wtfestival.org. Dawn Landis wrote the music and lyrics for Ro. The book is by Daniel Goldstein. Tori Merton McClure's autobiography is entitled A Pearl in the Storm, How I Found My Heart in the Middle of the Ocean. Dawn's album of songs from the show is available now, and her website is dawnlandis.com. I'm Sarah LaDuke, and you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.
Why would you climb Mount Everest? Why would you row the sea? Why would I climb Mount Everest? 'Cause it's in front of me. Ask me, oh ask me, dear inquisitor, what is it you don't see? Why would I climb Mount Everest? Because it's there for me. Ask me, oh ask me, dear inquisitor, I put myself through all the pain. My answer, oh inquisitor, will always be the same. It's not about going from point A to point B. The sun. My demons before they get to me.